Buglers, we are live from Leicester Square Theatre on the 16th of September with Chris Addison and Alice Fraser. It might be our only London date of the year, so get your tickets now. Oh, get them at thebuglepodcast.com. That bit's important.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is a podcast from The Bugle.
Hello and welcome to Catharsis. I'm Tiff Stevenson, full-time comedian, part-time massively unqualified therapist for this podcast only. Each week I talk to a guest about small irritations and pet peeves, also old wounds that maybe need a little scar revision. During the show we'll also dive into a topical gripe and a historical beef to see if we can provide some much needed insight or indeed some catharsis. You can definitely sweat the small stuff with me. This week I am raging about, can I just say, changing room mirrors. Ah! I had to shop for a new dress. I tried it on in the changing room with mirrors at angles that should be illegal. I think these are actually a hate crime. Like, I'm not supposed to know what my arse looks like from 180 degrees underneath. No one is supposed to know that apart from my toilet. Also, my profile, like, three quarters of my face is fine. I can put that in photos. I'm happy with that. But just pure profile, I immediately go, where is my chin? And add fluorescent tube lighting better suited to the underneath of a Subaru. That I could be an actual exhibit in London dungeons. Or hail the rat woman trying to hide her ratness with sequins. Go back to the bins, you rats. Don't bother the tourists. I can understand that ultimately, like, I can't control how people see me, or they've like seeing all of me. I can't request they only stand straight in front of me and not next to me. I just think we're not meant to see ourselves that thoroughly or intensely. It's very upsetting. It's similar to being at the hairdressers when you're just confronted with your face for upwards of like 2 hours. Those mirrors need like dimmer switches or curtains. Let me see it at the beginning and then the end. So open the curtains, I get to see what my hair looks like before, close them and then do it again at the end. Because otherwise, if I have to keep staring into my own soul for that long, I'm going to have a breakdown. Not least because I'll just start noticing new lines and I'm like, I've got a premenstrual moustache coming on there. One eyebrow is higher than the other and then I leave thinking I look like a Picasso. So I don't think it's healthy. That's my rage. Changing room mirrors or being in front of mirrors for a long time. They say that sharing is caring. A problem shared is a problem halved. And that happiness is only real when shared. So please welcome my nice, funny person with things to get off their chest this week. I'm joined by writer, director and Joburg Joker. That's what I've gone with. Gilly Apter.
Thank you. I like that, Joburg Joker.
Yeah.
I had a show called Jokes in Joburg, so it works.
At the top of the show, we like to ease you in with an old grudge. This is where you bring a personal gripe, something from your life that you feel really needs addressing or you haven't quite got over. And maybe you just want some sympathy from me. I'm also willing to give that. But spill your guts, Gilly.
Tiff, this is a tough story. You know, when I was young, my parents took me to the opera once, and my parents were socialites, you know, my father was a doctor. Ooh. And when I was a little boy of 9 years old, they took me to the opera, and on our way home we got mugged.
Oh,
and they
wow.
were murdered in an alley, and then I went home and I was attacked by bats, which was very scary for me. And you know what happened was I just decided I was going to become a Batman, and I've been looking for those muggers ever since, never found them, but that's who I've got my gripe against.
That's your origin story.
Yes.
Is that a gripe or an origin story?
No, rarely. I'll tell you who I had a gripe against when I was young. When I was a teenager, I was in love with this boy at school. Well, he wasn't at school, actually. But, you know, it was like a teenage love, right? He had an older girlfriend who was, well, now that I think about it, it's kind of crazy. She was 30. And like, he was 18. I was probably 16 or 17. And I just knew innately in my soul at that age that I could not possibly compete with her, you know? And she was my nemesis ever since. Even now, I sometimes see her around.
Do you?
Yes.
Right. And, but she's that bit older than you. Are you still like?
Yeah. So she's, I would say 14 years older than me. So right. She's like in her mid 50s.
Right.
And whenever I see her around, I'm still like, my nemesis.
Well, so technically he was 18.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like this is going to come up later on again, this discussion around ages, but it doesn't feel necessarily equal, does it? An 18-year-old with a 30-year-old, but it's legal. Is it moral? These are the questions.
And
we
also
like to
it's
ask.
We always have a stickier feeling around like a younger boy and an older woman.
We do. It seems to go unremarked upon when it is much older men with much younger women.
Yes, and he was in a lot of trouble for it. Like his family stopped speaking to him. It was the older sister of his best friend. They stopped speaking to him. So it was like this almost like illicit relationship that wasn't allowed to happen. And I think that's probably what fueled it even more. But I was like his best friend who he would tell about like all his escapades with, which was painful. So that really scarred me as a teenager.
So you're sitting there and he's like, I just really care about her. And you're leaning in trying to kiss him.
Yeah, no,
while he's pouring his heart out.
It was much worse than that, Tiff. It was much worse. He told me explicit things that I really, really did not want to know as like the long-suffering.
Unrequited.
Yes. It was painful. That's my old gripe.
So.
And I like to hang on to it. You know what I mean? I don't see a reason to let it go. It's nice.
Unrequited love is a good gripe to bring to the show because I feel like as we move through our lives, do the patterns of these relationships repeat themselves? Do these wounds open up again? And you're saying it's still there. You're holding on to it, but you probably moved on from it. But was he your first love?
I think so.
Right.
Probably the first significant person.
But you were friends.
Yes.
And then it moved into
another. Me tell you, that is my jam. You know, anyone I was ever in love with was like, I didn't know how to do anything else, so I just befriended them.
Right.
I was like a friend zone machine.
I rarely hear this from the female side, you see.
Yeah.
I normally only hear friend zoning, and because also when men say it, it's, you know, not to be too on the note, but it has such a sense of expectation.
Yes.
Like I remember friend zone coming up in the country. She's friend zoned you. And you're like, why do you think that you are like, this is just your right to be anything other than friend zoned, right?
That's such a good
question.
So
I rarely hear it from women, but I also find that women tend to be like emotional support a lot of the time.
Yes.
For men in these situations.
Yes.
You end up taking on quite a heavy emotional labor.
Big time. And it's because men don't talk to each other. So a lot of the time, you know, even if you're in a dating situation and let's say you think something is going on with you and someone, it's like they seem like they're attracted to you. You're together all the time. You're engaging all the time. It could take you a little while to realize that actually you're just functioning as this emotional support person for them because they don't have anyone else to do it with. They're not conscious of it. They don't even know they're doing it half the time.
Right.
So it's very easy to become a friend to them because they need it.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's very easy to fall into that role. And you might be thinking there's something romantic happening, but it's not.
Well, you might be thinking this will grow into something more. But, you know, and I'd like to hear from people that have like grown into, you know, friendships that have grown into love. And I mean, I suppose I met my now husband. We didn't start dating right away, actually. We met 2 years before we started going out. And I think we were both seeing other people and stuff, and I sort of liked him. I was like, oh, he's handsome. And that was sort of that. But yeah, I didn't feel like it was. So I suppose we were friends before we got together.
Right.
But not like really, really close friends.
Right.
Where it was like,
right.
Why have I never.
No, I
revealed.
Only knew how to take an object of my affection and then make them a friend. I didn't know. I didn't know my powers. You know what I mean? I didn't think that I was like a sexual being. I didn't think that I was attractive. So I didn't know. I didn't have any of that. And so I never thought that they were attracted to me either. You know, I always just thought, oh, it wasn't even conscious. I think it was just the route that I took because it was what I knew how to do, almost like a defense mechanism.
Right.
You know?
And do you think you still do that now in relationships or not so much?
I think it's my impulse.
Was this a lesson for you to go, oh, actually?
Yeah, big time. I think like in my 20s, in my like mid to late 20s, I figured out that I was like a late bloomer. You know, I suddenly thought I was hot and I was like, oh, I'm a hot person. I can be a hot person. It was a very short period of time.
I'm a late bloomer as well. I got married in my 40s. So, you know, I completely and utterly.
I recommend blooming late.
Yes.
I do.
It's better than blooming early and then all your leaves withering.
Correct.
And then you're going, what do I do now?
Correct.
You just get resilience and skills in other areas if you're a person who comes through a lot of stuff late. Like you learn how to deal with rejection and stuff better, I think. This is what I want to see, because I often see this. We see like lists of 30 under 30. I want to see 60 over 60. I want to know people who have done stuff like in their second act.
I think you're going to start seeing that now. I think that's great. That's a great idea. You should start that.
I'll start it. I'll do 60 over 60, 60 over 50 60. Over 50 or 40 over 40. Like, because it's otherwise it's like under 30 and you're like, oh, right. You're basically just saying we're done once we get to that point, you know.
Totally.
And I think all of the discourse and everything is massively unhelpful when we get into this kind of crazy ageism. As someone who's getting older, we're all getting older. You're all going to get there. So chill out.
Yeah, everybody must just relax. You know what I do now when I often ask people like the age in my show that I do. And every now and again, somebody will say, guess. Just guess. And now when somebody tells me to guess, I think of what I think their age is and then I add 5 years.
And then they get really annoyed.
Yes. Just grow up. Like we're all dying, like you say.
We're all dying. Doesn't matter. Age ain't nothing but a number, as our Leia said. Right. Thank you for sharing your old grudge. Hopefully I feel like you've healed it a little bit by us laughing. And you said you've moved on from it and you don't do it so much now.
I have moved on from it. I just like to remember it. It fuels me a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a person who has a lot of grudges.
Right. Okay.
So it's nice to have a definitive one, you know.
You don't harbour grudges.
Not really.
I build port side attractions. I build entertainment. I build a pier. I harbour them all.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Topical cream is the next section of the show. That's where we apply some balm to a stingy news story that's got you all het up. What's really got you goat?
My big news story gripe at the moment is Kanye. Or what? As he's currently known, Ye. Okay. So, he's been saying all this anti-Semitic stuff. And honestly, last night I was speaking to my friend about it. And there's a few things about it that irritate me. One, that in the first place, we place so much stock in a person who has shown us how unstable they are. Now we're in a situation where huge brands have placed so much stock in him, literally, you know, and now we're all shocked that he's come out and said a bunch of crazy things about black people, about Jewish people.
White Lives Matter t-shirts.
Yeah. And this morning I read that Adidas have dropped him. And which is unbelievable. It really is unbelievable because he went out and said, well, Adidas is never going to drop me. So what? So I can say whatever I want, basically. And they have dropped him. And there's so much about it that annoys me. One, the fact that we did put so much stock in him. And I have to say, like, I, as a huge fan, am guilty of that. I look at the partnership between, like, you know, Yay and Nike, and then after that, Yay and Adidas, and I go like, yes, that's exciting, that's great, I love that, you know, but I don't put my money into that. I wonder, like, if I'm a CEO, would I put money into something so unstable, where we see the unstable behavior, like, unfolding over years and years and years, and now be so shocked, you know? And then the other thing is, I really, now I have to stop listening to Kanye West. That's a lot of my, like, that's in a lot of playlists, man. A lot of playlists.
Well, I feel like people expect, I suppose, his mental health to manifest itself in a certain way, right?
Mm. Yes.
And he has been behaving. And then I saw a video of someone saying, why hasn't Kim come out and said anything? And so, listen, I've been a long time not fan of the Kardashians. And, I sort of remember a few years back, I used to have a bit of stand-up about Kanye basically claiming he was a polymath, you know, and then again, that's someone who straddles disciplines, like, you know, science and the arts, you know.
Yes.
Like, but he was doing his fashion lines, which, you know, I got to say, I'm like not mad into the inside of a trainer cage thing that came out, but people enjoyed them. I guess it's, you know, this same argument that keeps coming up. Is it cancel culture? Is it accountability culture? It's very, very messy with Kanye because it is tied up with someone who's clearly going through mental health difficulties. But if that is the case, why are so many of these brands then just like throwing themselves at him in order to gain that elevated status from him? Then the minute it doesn't manifest in a way that they feel is okay, and he has said horrific things, like there's no taking away from that then it's like, well, of course, we never align ourselves with that. And it's like, but you're aligning yourself.
There were
yourself
so many
with
clues, so many signs.
Yes.
And what irritates me even, I've got a preemptive aggravation, which is, I know exactly what's going to play out from all of this, right? Because he's been making all these anti-Semitic remarks, and all of these huge brands have dropped him, I guarantee that this will result in even more anti-Semitism, where the people who are already ignorant will say, oh, look how powerful the Jews are, you know? I can tell you as a Jewish person, that is the backlash that happens immediately after something like this. Oh, you see,
they didn't drop
him when he was, you know, doing the stuff about slavery, you know. Oh, but now that he's speaking about the Jews, suddenly he's been dropped from everything. Oh, look how, they do control everything, you know.
Yes, yeah, it just feeds into, what is it, they call it confirmation bias?
Correct.
So they already think these things and now they think.
And so now it's like even more evidence. Oh, how was one of the most powerful pop stars in the world toppled? Oh, because of the, you know, the Jews.
It kind of feels like a time where like these rising anti-Semitic comments are being said, conspiracy theories are being thrown around and stuff. And
yes.
I suppose rather than deal with a lot of people that actually, what's interesting about Kanye is that, because he is an entertainer, that is a way of people thinking as well that they've kind of dealt with anti-Semitism. That's interesting to me, as opposed to, I guess, lots of pockets of people who have real power.
Yes.
Like
yes.
In governments or in far right organizations and groups and stuff like this, where you go, that could actually be really damaging and hurtful or are causing,
yes,
well, you know, like attacking people and like, you know, not saying, again, I'm not condoning anything he says by saying that, but I often think sometimes when we hold the flame to celebrities over a lot of this stuff,
absolutely,
it feels like a barb, like we're talking about applying a stingy balm to a topical news story. It often can feel like that. You go, well, that's, oh, thank goodness we dealt with that.
We ended anti-Semitism because we cancelled.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the rest of it gets to just carry on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
What would be your ideal outcome, do you think? Has he climbed down from his comments or said
no, not at all? He's doubled down as far as I know. And what's interesting to me is like, it's so hard for me to believe that he is like a hater of any people, you know? It's hard for me to believe. He's an artist. A lot of people will often blame racist behavior on mental illness.
Right.
But sometimes there is a very fine line, you know? And in this case, there does seem to be a very fine line. It's very hard for me to believe that he truly hates Jewish people. Even after all this, it really is hard for me to believe. I think what's more at play here is his, like, wild, chaotic nature that just decides to, you know, blurt out whatever thought that comes into his mind.
Unstable people having a lot of power.
Yes, I think that's
results in more instability.
Yeah, and I think that unfortunately, the sphere of influence that he has is really deeply influenced by the things that he says, you know.
Right.
Because I can tell you, I'm not even joking when I tell you, after those first few remarks, I saw a comedian from South Africa on Twitter making jokes about the Holocaust. And I can tell you that person was emboldened.
Right.
They were emboldened, you know.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, that's okay to say.
If he's saying it, it's okay for me to say it.
I'm not saying that he turned that person into an anti-Semite, but like he was like, oh, I see that that's okay in the world. Well, you know.
Yeah, and there's a huge difference between making jokes from a place of understanding or knowing it, or what you feel is revealing a dark truth about something.
Yes.
Or just going, yes, oh, no, exactly. We're having a laugh at the expense of people who've suffered.
Yes.
And there's a, you know.
And also I can tell like with this particular case, I can tell that the person has no idea, doesn't even know what they're saying. And in fact, I reached out to him and I said, I'm doing this first privately because this is what I would want somebody to do for me if I was out of line. And because I know you and this doesn't seem right for you, I'm going to tell you, you are doing something very wrong. Right. You know, this is very, very racist, anti-Semitic and hurtful.
Yes.
And I wanted to know if you knew that you were doing that. If not, you should know that you are and you should stop. And to his credit, he replied saying, okay, I understand. I'm sorry. And he stopped.
Right. Well, that's...
you know, which is an unusual outcome in these times.
That's a useful bit of dialogue, I guess.
Yeah.
That would be what they, when we talk about this a lot of the time, of like not calling out, calling in.
Yes, exactly.
Which is where you go, which is sort of what you hope with most things. And I'll say this just sort of as we're tying up to put the button on this bit a little bit. But I think that's effectively a very useful thing of kind of going, what's the ideal in a situation if, because we're all human, we all make mistakes. And that is a thing of like, I've said this before, but we live in society now where humans are expected to be like absolute vodka, you know, like this 100% pure proof. Like there's no, that you can't, you're pure, you can't make mistakes. So what you hope is that if you do a thing that someone says to you, that's a friend that kind of goes, do you know that this could be, it could be taken this way. It could be misconstrued. Yes, and you go, okay, I accept that. Or you go, oh, that's not what I meant by that. Or you clarify, or you get to make adjustments. And that's what calling in is kind of going, actually, let's talk about this. I'm not sure it's great.
Totally.
And that's the ideal. Unfortunately, the calling out is where it's thousands of people. It's very public. It's very, and then you push someone immediately into a position of massive defense.
Totally. Which is why
doubling
I did that
down.
Thing, right. I made a choice. I was almost going to reply on the, like in the public forum.
Yeah.
And then I thankfully when I'm on social media, I do think a lot about what I do.
Yes.
And I all I had to do was think about it for another few minutes and make the different choice.
Yeah.
And then come to a much more of a middle place rather than an extreme place.
It's time for your unpopular opinion. A thing that everyone hates but you love, or a thing that you love that everyone hates. Tell me what that is.
Well, because I'm in the UK, when the pound depreciates, everyone hates it, but I love it because I have to go back to South Africa and take the pounds with me. And
so amazing.
My
get
pounds
more money.
Become more rands.
Yes.
Yes. So that's something that everybody hates.
Mucho rand.
Yes. Which is not a lot of rand.
Right. I was talking about this a couple of weeks ago, I think, saying sort of when it almost gained parity with the dollar, the disappointment of, you know, I remember getting sent money from America and it only being half. So I'm going, I just need to go out and make some American dollars because they're worth a lot more now.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I can't tell you how thrilling it is. To just
to watch
multiply.
The pound sink, to watch an economy.
Yeah, please, a little bit more. But then when I start earning proper pounds, I would like it to then just go back. You know, when I have to actually spend money in London.
Yes,
then,
yeah.
Then
because you're coming back, aren't you?
Yes,
you're
here. So I needed to even out sort of around Feb,
so what you want,
next year.
Okay, right. Yeah, so what we want, if you wouldn't mind, is the pound to just kind of stay where it is.
Yeah.
So you can get all that money and then come back and have a strong pound.
Correct. That would
be great. I'm talking about like it's a hard on. Could we have a raging pound?
Head
is shaking his head like, what are you talking about? Money like it's an erection. I don't know. It just happens.
It is.
In many ways, it is. It's harder. It's up or it's down.
Exactly.
You know, it's hard or it's soft.
It's sexy.
It's sexy, yeah. Yeah.
When you have it, not when you don't.
Yes, yeah. So is that how at the moment, do you think, like, internationally, you have said that people are looking at Britain and going, what is happening?
I mean, I thought that during the pandemic as well. You know, in the early months of the pandemic in South Africa, we thought we were like doing such a good job. You know, our president took decisive action, you know, locked everything down. We were very, very proud in the beginning of the pandemic of how he handled everything. And we were watching America and Britain just like free fall with the numbers of people getting sick and dying. And I just remember thinking, this is not how this is supposed to go. Like a pandemic, you know, we've seen the movies, you know, the aliens come and then America and the UK, they battle it out to save us. We're not supposed to save
yourselves
ourselves. Yeah. It feels very unnatural and very scary.
New Zealand and South Africa just like doing a great job of, well, I think this is not the plan. But then also I would argue that for Boris, it was the plan because he always sort of wanted herd immunity, which is sort of what it sort of careened towards eventually. Every decision was too late, too little, too late. It felt like everything was done here. And the idea that up to the point that we're sort of recording this, there was a possibility that's gone now, that he might re-enter the arena.
Right.
Like a gladiator that's just had a couple of like, you know, lion slashes across his face. And he's like, I'm back. Everyone wants to see me. And you're like, no, when we go through everything, the beats of what you've done over the last 2 years, we absolutely
the
do
beats.
Not.
Let's go through the beats, Boris.
Let's go through the beats, Boris.
I do think, I have to tell you, every time I see a picture of that man, I am stunned anew. Like, I'm like, how is this not just a character in a film? How is this a real person?
Oh, he's, because it's very curated. This is what's annoying about it, for this like lovable buffoonery. And the British press have been complicit in it as well, a bit like they were in America with Trump.
Right.
The British media have been very complicit in this building of Boris as this, oh, he's just an Eton boy that doesn't like, he's just, oh, isn't he charming? Doesn't he? I'll declaim a bit of Plato and oh, my shoelaces are undone. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry. No one gets past like teenage years walking around with their shoelaces constantly undone. And the hair is purposefully messed up before he goes on camera. And I came up with a term for that. I called it mopaganda. It's just going out, doing a few lies.
That's so good.
Yeah, mopaganda. So, yeah, thank you for your unpopular opinion. But a very popular opinion is Boris is a knob. It's time for our aurochs, or historic beef. This is where we look at historical arguments and offer solutions. Actually, in this case, I don't even know so much that it's offering solutions so much as getting angry on behalf of someone who's no longer here. So I will introduce this. This is the Duke versus the Duchess of Argyll, and a very early case of revenge porn. So she was nicknamed the Dirty Duchess by the press, but Margaret, Princess of Argyll, was one of millions of women who had their sexuality used against them with revenge porn. So she was born into a wealthy family. She was a socialite, a bit like a Batman or yourself, really. And at 15 years old, she got pregnant by the actor David Niven, who was 18 at the time. So this is what I mean about, we'll talk about ages. He was 18 and her father was furious with the news and sent her to London for a secret abortion. Because obviously the shameful part of that is that she was pregnant, not that you were letting her have sex with an adult man. silly, annoying Margaret. And so she was this society girl who stopped traffic on the way to her first wedding, which is a bit I'm jealous of because I just annoyed some people with bagpipes. She got married to a man named Charles Sweeney during her marriage. So this is, she's lived before all this other stuff. So this is just a bit of potted history. During her marriage to Sweeney, she had three children, one of whom was a stillborn girl, as well as a son, Brian, and a daughter, Frances, who went on to marry the Duke of Rutland. So one of her daughters then became a duchess. And she also suffered 8 miscarriages. This is a woman who's really sort of gone through it, got pregnant at 15, got married, but she's a bit of a personality. She's a bit of a socialite. And in those times, it's dangerous to have too much personality because that's what Rosemary Kennedy had and they lobotomized her. So like genuinely, they were like, she's too spirited. They gave her a prefrontal lobotomy. Oh, and then she almost died during an accident whilst visiting her chiropodist. This is baffling to me. Where she fell down a lift shaft, which I feel like we could do an episode of this on its own, could we not?
It's a wild story.
Was that of Ripley's Believe It or Not? Like, maybe that happened loads in the 40s. Cause of death, the Hun, or falling down a lift shaft. Like, you're either going to take out by Hitler or a lift shaft. So this is all pre to the main scandal, which is she got divorced, got engaged to one of the Lehman brothers. They never married. And then her second marriage was to Ian Douglas Campbell, the 11th Duke of Argyll.
So many twists and turns in this life before we even get to the part of, like, what becomes the major thing that affects her life.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's already such a crazy life.
It's a crazy life. And she's this woman who's living fully. And I imagine there wasn't ways to talk about. We talk about miscarriages now. People are sort of being more and more open. I have friends who've talked very movingly and personally about their experiences with that.
Yes.
And
but even that, even 8 miscarriages, okay, that tells me that you got pregnant 8 times.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And you had 3, so you got pregnant.
That's
like,
a lot. That's a lot. Like, you keep going, you know, you keep going.
Yeah, 11 pregnancies.
Yes.
And, you know, what was the situation? Well, I suppose back then there wasn't birth control, and that she had this abortion at 15 years old. And she stayed friends with David Niven, so I think, throughout her life.
Right.
So I think, I wonder if this woman was, then what happens next with the sort of scandal is, I wonder if this woman just felt like she never got to be the person she truly loved. Maybe at 15, she was like you going, this is the man I'm going to be with. So she marries him. She'd had a lot of life, but she was still societally very well regarded. And then the fractures form in their relationship. And then the Duke becomes suspicious that his wife's been unfaithful. So he, like a totally reasonable person, apparently, hires a locksmith to break into her private drawers while she was away in New York. And that's where you can tell the story is of the time, because that now what would be what your iCloud would be hacked.
Yes. He was like, I didn't look at her phone. It was open.
So the idea that someone could go into your drawers and extract this kind of stuff, or like read the stuff you got in, just anything that you're texting on your phone or anything that you, you know, like. And so when he got into the drawer, he found this evidence that was proof of her infidelities, including Polaroid pictures of her with another man. I think there were letters.
Yeah.
So he was like, right.
And the photos kill me. The fact that she has Polaroids of herself having sex with a man during that time kills me, because I'm like, who took the photos?
Yes.
And also, it's such a huge risk to have like hard evidence.
In flagrante. That was probably less risky though, right? Doing them on your phone. If your phone gets hacked, they can be uploaded to a cloud.
Well, I don't do that either.
No, I don't do that. But
because
but it's less
so risky.
It's risky, right?
Yeah.
It's less risky, I suppose, than an actual, back in those days, you've got one photo, and once you've taken that and burnt the negatives.
Yes, if you were, like sharp enough to do that. But I guess also, I think Polaroids don't have negatives.
They don't have negatives, so I suppose they're just.
Yeah.
So it was like her little box of like.
She just wanted like one
sexy treasures,
sexy picture of herself while she was young and hot to remember the good times.
Yes.
And he used it against her.
And so she was this obviously sexually confident,
yes,
forward woman. And so then they used the pictures as part of a legal case. And he drew up, you know, against the Dutch. So he drew this case up against her as part of divorce proceedings alongside a list of 88 men he accused her of having sex with behind his back. And I've got to imagine with a list that's just anyone she's met.
Listen, when I read that number, 88 men that she's had sex with, first I thought, like, okay, he's exaggerated that for the sake of, you know, his case. But I don't think at that time you needed to you could have just accused her of sleeping with one person and you would have been able to make your case. And so that leads me to believe that she did, in fact, have sex with 88 men. And in that case, I am a massive admirer of this woman.
Oh,
I
mean, big fan.
Girl smashed. 88, that's a serious body count.
This is where it's frustrating again, and this is where it comes into sort of revenge porn, because this court case became a tabloid sensation, and then she was dubbed the Dirty Duchess, and the identity of the headless man in the pictures was speculated as being Sir Winston Churchill's son-in-law, but no one knew. So it's just there's obviously her naked and a man, but his head's, you know,
like
he's gone
or something.
He's gone, fuck this.
Yes, he's smart. He put his hand in front of his face and he was like, this could get out on social media.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm not interested in being.
And then this is where it gets Duncan Sandys, as it was reported to the Minister of Defence, he had access to a Polaroid camera. So that's how sort of rare, I guess, the Polaroids
right,
were
that's
there
what I was
as well.
When I read that as well, I thought, where did they get this Polaroid camera? I thought that only existed like in the 50s
or 60s. I thought the 60s or 70s, yeah.
So you're saying this is like a case of revenge porn in its earliest...
They're talking about it in its earliest form of revenge porn. The leaking of or the handing over of photographs that were not intended for you, that have been stolen or that... Actually, even if they were intended for you, that's part of revenge porn, are used against you to destroy a woman's reputation and life and leave her penniless.
I have to say that even if he didn't have these pictures, who knows what the thing was at the time, he could have probably... you know, turned the world against her.
Just invented something and said, that's what it is. And, you know,
exactly.
She's trying to kill me. I don't have any proof of this, but she is.
Take my word for it. I have a strong feeling.
I have a castle.
Yeah.
And an entitlement.
Yes.
So therefore, this woman must be punished.
Yes. I have a castle and money and a story. And nothing's going to stop me, you know. Just trust me. And they were like, you know what? It sounds plausible. Okay, cool.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your thoughts the Duchess of Argyle. Before we go, we have time for one quick angry aunt, which is where we get readers to send in problems. We have one this week, which is an anonymous one. It says, Dear Catharsis, I recently got fired from my job after 44 days. What do I do now? I can't imagine who this has come in from. So essentially... you know, the problem here is that someone has been very bad at their job, very publicly. Where do you go from there? Where do you go? Like, because this section I like to call angry aunt, because I like to get angry on behalf of the person, but I don't feel angry on behalf of Liz Truss.
I was just trying to understand who she was, and then she was gone.
You so barely scratched the surface of the incompetence that was laid bare.
So from what I understand as an outsider, she came in, made a huge mess, and then bounced.
Well, the problem is, I guess, and so if you're listening, Liz, I think, because you sent the problem in, are listening. I think the problem is that we have a situation a bit like, I think it's the West Pier in Brighton, where it's a wreck, it burnt down years ago, it's still there. You can buy the West Pier for something like £1, but you have to promise to spend 30 million on it or whatever. Right. So what she's inherited was a mess.
Right.
The problem is putting yourself forward to be the person that goes, a man has made a mess. I'm the woman coming in trying to tidy this up.
Right.
Like Boris has made a mess. Isn't going to get the blame for the mess. You're just going to get the blame that the mess hasn't been tidied up. So there you go. That's my defense for you. That's me getting angry for you, Liz. You've stepped in. There's dog shit all over the living room. You didn't leave the dog shit or just human feces. It's come from Boris.
Yes.
There's shit all over the living room. You've come in, you've stepped in it, trailed some of it around the house, and now everyone thinks you did the shit. And that's unfair for her.
That's unfair as the premise of what she was coming into. Let's say she was a great leader.
Yes.
It still would have been a huge mess that she came into and took the blame.
It still would have been like, there's half the shit in this room that there was before you came into the room. So well done. You've managed to clean half the shit. I think what you should do, Liz, is maybe spend some time with your beloved pork markets. I mean, that's where her real interest lies.
What is that?
Pork markets. So she did a big speech about trade and she said, we're selling tea in China and our pork market. It was insane. It was unhinged. And it was sort of part of the Brexit negotiations where she just kept saying pork markets. And so then there's obsession with pork markets. So maybe I'll tell you where you could go next. Because here's the thing. I think with the job of Prime Minister, once you've been in, you get sort of offered 115K for life in your parliamentary role, right? Correct me on that if I'm wrong, anyone that's listening. But people are saying that she should refuse that because she was in for 44 days. Basically, she's made Theresa May look like a Duracell bunny. Like, like with the amount of time, like Theresa May managed to last 2 years. And then some. So 44 days. Can you really say you've been Prime Minister if you've only done it? Like, it's like a supply teacher.
I don't know. I think a win is a win. Yeah, I think once you're in, you're in. You know, I wouldn't give that up for nothing.
No, well, I will say the men probably wouldn't give the money up. So from that feminist, oh, gross.
Feminism is confusing. And it is a journey that we are continuing to trod, and we're not sure exactly what all the rules are.
How about take that money, Theresa, and do something useful with it? So then you can redefine yourself in the eyes of the British public, rather than us thinking you came in, the Queen died, you tanked the economy,
and then you left. I think that's a really wise piece of advice, but I've got different advice for Liz.
Okay. Hit me.
If I'm Liz, here's what I do. Lay super low, you know? Do some surgery, use some money to like refresh myself, you know, different hair color, whatever, go to Greece, right? Lalo, even come to South Africa. We love a useless...
British politician.
any politician of any kind. You'll be in good company. It's summer in South Africa right now. Lay low. Have a good time in Cape Town. December, January, warm. You know, you have plenty of money because of the exchange rate that you, you know, fucked up so badly. And so now you can buy, like, for 2 months, you can be in, like, this beautiful Airbnb on the beach, right? Spend those 2 months just recuperating, right? Come back, reinvent yourself with your side hustle that's, like, as an influencer on TikTok that... is like, you know, fields political, like, discourse on TikTok with your new look. And also, like, does fashion stuff with Trini.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes, yeah. Do that. I mean, she made much...
you know, like a Martha Stewart type.
Yeah,
like
Martha Stewart cross with Kim Kardashian, yeah. Cross with...
Yeah, I think that's what I would do. I would just Aggie go all the way because
Clean Your House.
Once you're a controversial character... you've got to lean into the controversial nature of it, you know? So now if she does something crazy like that, we won't be like, oh, that's crazy. No, we'll be like, oh, interesting.
Good advice. I don't want you to take it, Liz, because I don't want you to thrive. But however.
You said advice. I mean,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much, Gilly. Finally, catharsis. Now that you've got some stuff off your chest. Have we helped? Have you found some peace? Do you feel better about the world?
No.
No. And quite frankly, it's not my job to make you. So that's good.
I wasn't feeling so bad, so it's okay.
Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Yes. I am doing a show called Story Party every Sunday in London. However, we're kind of done for the year. I will be back in February, at the beginning of February. Tickets are at storyparty.co. So come watch it. It's a dating-themed stand-up show that I host. It's very funny and entertaining. It has a storytelling aspect to it. And other than that, just follow me on Instagram. It's Gillog, G-I-L-L-O-G.
And whereabouts is the story party?
It's at a nightclub in Shoreditch called Trapeze. And you can get the tickets on Fever.
If you'd like to follow me, I'm at Tiff Stevenson on Twitter, Tiff Stevenson Comic on Instagram. I'm on tour in May next year. And a couple of dates in March. I'll be doing the Imagine Festival in Belfast. And then I'll be touring Bath, Bristol, Manchester, Newcastle, Glasgow, Edinburgh. If you want the tour dates, there's about 20 of them. Go to my website, tiffstevenson.co.uk, or you can follow the link tree from my Instagram. Hopefully see you at a live show. Thank you for joining us on Catharsis. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.
You can listen to other programmes from The Bugle, including The Bugle, The Last Post, Tiny Revolutions, and The Gargle, wherever you find your podcasts.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.